I'm a mad old cat lady. There's a picture on the back of her early books, the publicity shot used for the first 10 years of her career, in which she holds a baby cheetah, its mouth open, tongue sticking out as her tongue does now. It suggests the suckling toddler or the stroke victim. "My British publisher insisted on the stupid cheetah," she'll tell me later, "because that's what an African writer was supposed to have, the wild clutched to her bosom, suckling the continent, all those tired imperial fantasies." "What form do you anticipate this taking?" she asks now. "Please don't imagine I'm going to give you access to my letters and diaries. I'll talk to you, but I'm not going to dig out documents or family albums." I thought a series of interviews to start. "Ah, a way of getting comfortable," she asks. I nod, shrug my shoulders, produce a small digital recorder. She snorts. "I hope you don't imagine that we're going to become friends over the course of this. I won't take walks with you in my garden or visit museums. I don't do drinks. I won't impart the wisdom of the aged to you. I won't teach you how to live a better life. This is a professional arrangement, not a romance. I'm a busy person. I have a new book coming out next year, Absolution. I suppose I shall have to let you read it in due course." I defer to you. "I've read your articles, as I said. You don't get things entirely wrong. Perhaps you'll be able to correct some of my mistakes." Claire did not answer her own door when I arrived. Mari, the beetle-eyed assistant, delivered me into a reception room that overlooked the front garden and the long drive, the high beige periphery wall mounted with barbed wire shaped and painted to mimic trained ivy, and the electronic gate closing out the road. Security cameras monitor the property. Claire has chosen a cold room for our first interview. Maybe it's the only reception room. No, a house this size will have several. There must be another one, a better one, with a view of the back gardens and the mountain rising above the city. She'll take me there next time, or somehow I'll manage to find it on my own. Her face is narrower than her pictures suggest. If there was a fullness in her cheeks 5 years ago in Amsterdam, the health has receded, and now her face is wind-cracked, a lake bottom in drought. It looks nothing like any of the photographs. Her unruly squall of blonde hair has silvered, and though it's thin and brittle, it still has some of the old lustre. Her abdomen has spread. She's almost a very old woman, but doesn't look her real age, more like 60 than whatever she really is. Her skin is tanned, and the line of her jaw has a plastic tension. Despite the slight hump in her back, she tries to remain erect. I feel a flash of anger at her vanity. But it's not my place to judge that. She is who she is. I'm here for something else. "I hope you've brought your own food and drink. I don't intend to feed you while you feed off me. You may use the facilities at the end of the corridor on the left. Please remember to lower the seat when you've finished. It will encourage my sympathy." She narrows her eyes and seems to be smirking again, but I can't tell if she's joking or serious. "Are you going to record these discussions?" "Yes." "Take notes as well?" "Yes." "Is it on?" "Yes, it's recording." "Well?" "I'm predictable. I'd like to start at the beginning," I say. "You'll find no clues in my childhood." "That's not really the point, if you'll forgive me. People want to know. In fact, almost nothing is known about her life beyond the slim facts of public record, and the little she's condescended to admit in previous interviews. Her agent in London released a one-page official biography 5 years ago, when requests for information became overwhelming. Both sets of grandparents were farmers." "No, my paternal grandfather was an ostrich farmer. The other was a butcher." "And your parents?" "My father was a lawyer, an advocate, the first in his family to go to university. My mother was a linguist, an academic. I never saw much of them. They were women, girls to look after me, a succession of them. I believe my father did a fair amount of pro deo work." "Did that inform your own political stance?" She sighs and looks disappointed, as though I've missed a joke. "I don't have a political stance. I'm not political. My parents were liberals. It was to be expected that I would also be a liberal. But I think my parents were liberals in the reluctant way of so many of their generation. Better we should speak of left-wing and right-wing, or progressive and regressive, or even oppressive. I'm not an absolutist. Political orientation is an ellipse, not a continuum. Go far enough in one direction, and you end up more or less in the place where you started."